Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, Senior Editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, I sat down with Dr. Jacqueline French, the Director of Translational Research and Clinical Trials in Epilepsy at NYU Grossman School of Medicine. She discussed recently published data from part of the Human Epilepsy Project that suggests that the delay in identifying non-motor seizures can result in injury for individuals experiencing them, and that earlier identification may prevent this issue altogether.
I am a professor of neurology at NYU Langone Medical Center, as well as the chief medical and innovation officer of the Epilepsy Foundation. So this is actually an offshoot of a larger project. It's called the Human Epilepsy Project. And the concept of the Human Epilepsy Project is that when we first meet patients with newly diagnosed focal seizures, we don't know what their course is going to be, whether they're two-thirds of the time you give them a medication, the medication controls all the seizures, we call them treatment sensitive, and one-third of the time it doesn't, and we call them treatment resistant. So we were looking for sort of biomarkers of what would predict treatment resistance. So that was the concept. And in order to do that, we had to enroll, this is a large multi-center study, with a lot of great collaborators all over the world, actually. And we had to recruit people within the first 4 months of when they were diagnosed with epilepsy. So we had 440 or so patients who we did very thorough interviewing. And as part of that study, we had to really dig into what were their seizures like. And we got as good a history as we possibly could of how long those particular episodes had been occurring. And in order to get into the study, they had to be adjudicated by a group of four separate epileptologists from different centers who all agreed that the things that they were having, in fact, were epileptic seizures. And, you know, we did that based on their testing as well as their clinical history. So it was pretty well vetted that these were seizures. And what we started to find out was that these seizures that they were now getting treated for and diagnosed with, in many cases, had been going on for a very long time before they came to medical attention. Or sometimes they came to medical attention and those events were overlooked. So then we wanted to know, you know, in addition to looking for the factors that go into treatment resistance and treatment sensitivity, we started to think, what are the factors that go into overlooking epilepsy or people not realizing that they have epilepsy for such long periods of time? Because, you know, in the patients with the longest history, we could sometimes find that it was a decade, literally, that they were having these events.
So now when you guys sort of uncovered this, what ultimately did you find? And did you consider these findings sort of surprising? I know, obviously, you know, there's been a long time push to identify these patients earlier. But was it sort of shocking at how long some of these patients had been experiencing these events?
Well, I mean, all of us have some experience with people who have a long delayed diagnosis. I guess that all of us were kind of surprised that there was such a large group of people that had a delay. And, you know, the other thing I think that might have been surprising is that we all think that it's more likely that the first seizure will be what we call a disruptive or in some cases convulsive seizure. Whereas it turned out that what we now call subtle seizures or non-motor seizures are actually, for this focal epilepsy, the more common way that the epilepsy starts, not how they get diagnosed, but the way it starts. And people would have these non-motor seizures, these subtle seizures, for a long time, and often only came to medical attention when they had the disruptive seizure, usually a convulsion. And so we thought to ourselves, you know, this convulsion and its consequences could actually have been avoided if they had been diagnosed earlier. And, you know, sort of cutting to the chase, we also found that there were a significant number of automobile accidents. And in some cases, interestingly enough, not only one automobile accident, but sometimes two or even three. So people would come, you know, I don't know what happened. I the car came out of nowhere, you know, or whatever. But each time, you know, in retrospect, they could describe that when that happened, they were having one of these episodes. And so that to us, I think, was quite a surprise that there were so many preventable motor vehicle accidents.
So obviously identifying, you know, these sort of consequences, whether it's motor vehicle accident, I know you guys identified a number of patients who had experienced injury prior to their diagnosis. What are sort of some of the barriers that create this challenge of recognizing these patients that are experiencing these non-motor seizures? Because like you said, it seems that these are common and that these patients don't ultimately get these diagnoses a lot of times until their seizures become motor seizures. So what sort of stands in the way of potentially catching them earlier on?
So the first thing that I think stands in the way is people, you know, the public's perception of what epilepsy is. And I always talk about the television seizure. You never see anybody on TV having a seizure, which is not falling to the ground, shaking all their arms and legs, frothing at the mouth. And I think that if you ask the, you know, the person on the street, you know, what is a seizure, that's what they would tell you. And so when people start having, we're trying to coin a simple phrase to alert people, and, you know, for anybody that's watching, and that is the five S's, S-S-S-S-S. And that stands for short, sudden, strange, similar spells. So short, sudden, strange, similar spells. So it's something that is unusual, that seems to come out of nowhere and recurs over and over again. And if people have short, sudden, strange, similar spells, it may not be epilepsy. It may be migraine, or it may be something else, but it probably deserves to be checked out. And if you have short, sudden, strange, similar spells, and in the context of those, you feel like maybe you're not remembering conversations that are going on during that time, that things are a little fuzzy, even more so, you should be concerned that that might be a type of seizure and you should go seek medical attention. But people have not been told that. So, you know, 9 times out of 10, they say, maybe I shouldn't tell anybody. First of all, they say to themselves, probably everybody has this, yeah, you know, and then they say, maybe I shouldn't tell anybody because what would they think? Because sometimes these things are very unusual and people may even think that there's something psychiatric going on. Yeah. Sometimes these are misinterpreted as anxiety attacks, many different things. So, you know, I just was talking to a psychiatrist and he was saying that, you know, strangely, many people in an anxiety or panic clinic have epilepsy more than you might expect. Yep. And I was wondering to myself, maybe it's because you're treating it as anxiety and it's actually epilepsy. Yeah. So, you know, that is why these people can go for a very long time. So I think a public awareness of the fact that short, sudden, strange, similar spells could be epilepsy, just like they did in stroke when they, came out with a public campaign on FAST, you know, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So clearly there is a need for greater education of the general public. Do you think that physicians in general and clinicians in general, outside of, you know, epilepsy specialists, also sort of need some education? You know, I know you mentioned in the study that, you know, when patients present with these, you know, for these motor vehicle accidents at the emergency room to tend to their wounds, that potentially looking into seizure as a cause is perhaps something we should be exploring. Do you think that across medicine that education also sort of needs to be upped a bit?
Absolutely. And one of my co-author, the first author of the paper, Dr. Pelinen, he's now at the University of Colorado. He is actually moving forward from this study to the emergency room because he sees the emergency room as a point of contact where a lot of these people could be diagnosed. So there's two scenarios. One is that they come in after something happens, like a motor vehicle accident. Another one, which is even more straightforward, is they come in with a convulsion. Yeah. And, you know, most emergency room physicians feel like if you have a single convulsion, you shouldn't start treatment at that time. There's sort of a phrase I've heard from my patients that goes, everybody gets one seizure for free. I don't know what that means exactly, but the implication is, you know, one seizure can happen to anybody. It's not epilepsy. You don't have to worry about it. But in fact, in a lot of cases, if they were able to elicit this history to say, no, it's not the first seizure, it may be the 100th seizure, it may even be the 1,000th seizure, but it is the seizure that was convulsive, those people could get started on treatment much more quickly. They could be referred to the right doctor much more quickly. And within the people that I enrolled, just the small number of people that I enrolled into the Human Epilepsy Project, amazingly, there were a number of them that had not been treated rapidly after a single seizure and then had had more convulsions or had had more of these focal, what we call focal impaired aware seizures that got them into trouble. So the emergency room is one good point of contact where we could get the message out, but also to primary care doctors, who see these people, in their offices as well. And remember that epilepsy, and I think this surprises some people, is not at all a rare condition. And one out of 26 people in their lifetime will be diagnosed with epilepsy. One out of 26. And that's only the ones we find, right? Yeah. Who knows how many others there are out there.
Yeah, who spend years not getting a diagnosis. Absolutely. And now, so clearly sort of, you know, when these patients do present, whether it's to their primary care physician or to the, you know, God forbid, the emergency department with some sort of issue, whether it's, like we mentioned, from a motor vehicle accident, an injury or otherwise, clearly, you know, sort of a probing from the physician into that patient history is important to determine whether or not this convulsion is just the first, or if, you know, it was caused by perhaps a non-convulsive seizure. Do you think there's a challenge as well on the patient side in terms of patients being honest about, obviously, you know, you mentioned sort of that stigma associated with potentially not wanting to speak about it or not tell anyone about it. Do you think that patients are, you know, honest enough or even aware of that these could be potentially signs and symptoms of epilepsy?
So in my experience, I always ask the question when somebody comes with a convulsion, and I know a lot of my colleagues do too, about, do you have any strange spells that are very similar to each other that come out of nowhere? And one of two things happens is what I always say, and it's pretty consistent. Either they look at me and go, I have no idea what you're talking about, or you can actually see their eyes widen and their pupils dilate and they go, how did you know about my spells? And then they want to tell you about it because they've been wondering and worrying about it, but they haven't told anybody. And, you know, the experience can be, seeing your, you know, I've had so many different interesting and fascinating explanations of what people experience. Sometimes they just say it's indescribable, but sometimes they'll say, I see myself as a child in a past life. And I don't even believe in those things, but that's what happens, you know, just for that minute. Or suddenly there was a case that was written up in a journal a number of years ago, where during a seizure, everything that he saw, anybody that spoke to him, anything that he read would turn into the same single phrase over and over again. He couldn't like get his mind off of that phrase, no matter what he did. And then of course, after it was over, he couldn't remember what the phrase was. And that's a very, you know, sort of typical type of strange thing that can happen. And what would you do with that if that happened to you? Yeah. You know, you'd go, I have no idea what that was. And I can guarantee you, if people are watching this show, that somebody is out there going, oh my gosh, that's what's happening to me. You know, I did a radio show the other day, and that's exactly what happened. They opened the calls up on the call line, and the very first person that called clearly was having seizures.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, you know, the sort of raising this awareness about these five S's and just being aware of these signs, I'm sure would help, you know, tons of people out there. So for those non-epileptologists, the people who aren't, you know, readily aware of this, you know, and physicians particularly, how do you think they can best get involved in sort of improving the recognition of these symptoms? Is it, you know, an all-out campaign to inform their patients every time they see them? Do we need to develop sort of a wider education model? What do you think is sort of the first step we have to take?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, obviously it would be nice to have a public awareness campaign where you go to the subway and it says, you know, have you had an SSSSS or whatever? I don't know whether that's going to happen or not. I think and I don't think that people have to ask every single time that they see a patient, right? But I think, you know, if there's an annual screen or something along those lines, and there's another thing, there are things that increase the likelihood that seizures will develop, right? So somebody who's had a stroke, somebody who's had a head trauma, and those people, yes, it probably would be reasonable at once a year to ask them whether they have developed this type of episode, right? So in a very targeted population, that could be a good approach. You know, it's funny how the word spreads around. So, you know, if there was just one TV show where somebody had this type of seizure, then probably people would learn about it. You know, that's kind of the way people learn. So it's probably going to be a multi-pronged approach.
So now, in terms of this study in general, obviously the main finding extraordinarily important and very revealing. Were there any other you know, additional analyses that, or anything that you guys looked at from this specific data readout that were as revealing or as important to you as that main finding?
Well, we're still analyzing the results of the main study, because obviously the time to diagnosis was something that you could know as soon as the person was enrolled in the study. So we finished enrollment a number of years ago, but we just finished the long-term follow-up. Because we wanted to follow up people for 6 years. One thing that I think is very important for people to know related to this time to diagnosis is that I think that probably a number of my colleagues would have worried that these people who had been having so many seizures over so long a period of time would now become resistant to treatment. And in fact, we don't see an indication so far of that. People who had been having very long histories culminating in a convulsion or more than one convulsion responded almost immediately to an anti-seizure medication. So, you know, that's why making the diagnosis is so critical, because we have a treatment, and the treatment in 2/3 of cases is very, very effective. So people should know about that this is a treatable condition, And once it's treated, you know, people can go on with their lives and nobody is going to know, right? You take a pill every morning. And as long as the medication is working and you're taking your pill, you know, you're going to be fine. So, you know, one thing I guess that we didn't explicitly say is that for a primary care physician or a neurologist, if somebody reports a convulsion, don't stop there. It's so easy to focus on the biggest seizure and not ask about whether there were other spells, you know, SSSSS, before that convulsion, leading up to that convulsion. And again, as we already reviewed, if you ask, people will tell you. So it's critically important to ask for people in primary care and neurology to ask that question.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.